This podcast covers all things health, your body, your brain, and your well-being. Each week, we'll be joined by doctors, as well as the occasional guest, to talk about the health topics that mean the most to you.
Now, in this episode, I'll be discussing epicondylitis. The synonyms here, we all know, are lateral epicondylitis, tennis elbow, and medial epicondylitis, golfer's elbow. But essentially, they're both considered to be overload tendon injuries. And in my experience, these often occur after minor or unrecognized trauma to the extensor proximal insertion for tennis elbow or the flexor insertion, golfer's elbow, to the muscles of the forearm. Now, both tennis elbow and golfer's elbow do seem to have a greater prevalence in the population than most people think, with up to 3% of the population being affected. The peak incidence is in middle age, by which I mean between about 35 and 55, with men and women being equally affected. Now, tennis elbow and golfer's elbow account for around two-thirds of the persistent elbow pain in patients we see in primary care. And tennis elbow is far more common. It's 6 to 7 times more common than golfer's elbow. Obviously, it can be seen at any age depending on certain activities, but middle age is the most common. Now, the etiology essentially is repetitive overuse in the elbow. And if you get to the anatomy, we're looking at repetitive strain of the extensor carpa radialis brevis and the common extensor tendon. And repeated overuse of these can cause micro tears, what we then think causes a degenerative process. Now, we used to think that epicondylitis was an inflammatory condition, as its name suggests. But when you analyse inflammatory cells in that area, there is an actual lack of them. And so specialists are now increasingly thinking that the word epicondylitis, implying inflammation, may be a misnomer. And we're now talking about tennis elbow or golfer's elbow, which is much simpler, or even epicondylagia. But tennis elbow and golfer's elbow, in my view, are easier to remember. Now, the causes are obvious. Tennis elbow, surprisingly, although it used to cause significant numbers of tennis elbow in patients, we're now finding causes less because of the lighter rackets. And now, tennis is not the cause in the majority of people with tennis elbow. Far more common are jobs involving repetitive heavy lifting, or particularly the use of heavy tools. Things like heavy screwdrivers and power tools. And if these are being used in awkward positions, then that makes it more likely that a tennis elbow may occur. If you're used to using those tools, you've got a slightly less chance of developing a tennis elbow than if you're doing a project for the first time and are not used to using them. And we think that a similar process is involved in golfer's elbow. Now, a tennis elbow in a right-handed person is because of the action of using a racket in a right-handed way. Golfer's elbow, again, refers to a right-handed golfer.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Here is a quick word from our sponsor.
We take this few seconds off to inform you, our valued loyal listener, about the best health and fitness podcast shows from the Nespod Studios. Join us as we give you the best of the best health and wellness updates you can rely on for the treatment of chronic health problems. Classic functional medicine back to basics health tips and special updates from the best doctors in the United States of America. Check out this health and wellness podcast shows. Explore Health Talk Weekly, Healthy Lifestyle Matters, Excellent Health Digest, Healthy and Free Daily, and last but not least, Weekly Health and Fitness Corner. Also, check out Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told fiction podcast, for that real life on the go experience with the 27-year-old golden boy who made our guest invite number one list. He tells us about his story as it happens in real time and in real life. It's Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told. Go get a load of that happiness, because happiness is healthy as we know it. Join us every week as we continue to provide you the best of health and fitness wellness updates from around the globe. Enjoy the show.
And now, back to our episode.
The presentation in tennis elbow, which is the one I'm going to be talking about most today, is typically a gradual onset, usually in the dominant arm, although about 20% of cases can be in the other arm. Some cases can be bilateral, but in my experience, it is far more common to have unilateral tennis elbow. And what you get is a tender spot, typically just below the lateral epicondyle on the outside of the elbow. And the pain initially is mild, does not interfere with function, but then worsens over time. People often come and say, I can no longer open a jar or use a particular type of movement. And you can get to the point that I've seen where people really do find it difficult to even pick up a toothbrush. However, it's important to point out that elbow movements in tennis elbow are normal. And if you have someone who presents to you and you think it is tennis elbow, but they've got a restricted range of elbow movements, then I would seriously suggest you consider alternative diagnoses. It would be unusual for someone with tennis elbow to be presenting with limited mobility in their elbow. One of the signs I always try and test for is Tinel's sign. So by which I mean just tap very lightly on the medial elbow over the ulnar nerve. And if it's positive, then that will generate paresthesia without pain. A negative sign helps to exclude things like a cubital tunnel or other neurological conditions. If you really want to go the whole hog, then try Mills test. So in this, we straighten the patient's arm, we palpate the lateral epicondyle, and then we flex the wrist, and you pronate the patient's forearm. A positive Mills test is if that is painful. Cozen's test, which is not often done but can be helpful, is where you put the elbow in 90 degrees of flexion, and you then ask the patient to make a fist, and you deviate the wrist radially with their forearm pronated, and you resist extension at the wrist. If you then get pain in the lateral epicondyle, that's a positive result. Now, with golfer's elbow, you get pain and tenderness over the medial epicondyle radiating down into the forearm, and that pain is typically aggravated by wrist flexion and pronation. I tend to do fewer tests with golfer's elbow. For me, it's a much more easy diagnosis to make. But there is a golfer's elbow test where you pronate and you flex the wrist and the forearm at the same time. And a positive result is when you get pain over the attachment of the wrist flexor muscles on the medial aspect of the elbow. There are a number of significant differential diagnoses you should always consider when you're looking at someone with a probable epicondylitis. Obviously, things like arthritis and olecranon bursitis, they're usually fairly self-explanatory. Cervical nerve root entrapment can sometimes occur, and radiation of pain from the shoulder or wrist injuries can also happen. Carpal tunnel syndrome is on the list, but I haven't seen a case of carpal tunnel presenting with elbow epicondylitis type symptoms for a very long time. I also don't find it necessary to investigate epicondylitis in any great detail. If you're uncertain about the diagnosis, then yes, by all means, do something like inflammatory markers, a CRP. If you want to x-ray the elbow, get an ultrasound or even an MRI, that's fine. And if you think that there is ulnar nerve involvement with a medial epicondylitis, then nerve conduction studies may be indicated. Now, the management of both tennis and golfer's elbow is very similar and simple. So I'm going to talk about the management of tennis elbow, but essentially we can refer to golfer's elbow as well. So the first thing to do is to modify any activities that the patient says causes or makes their symptoms worse. And you need to do this for several weeks, between 4 and 8 weeks. And that includes avoiding any tasks that involve hand gripping, pinching, twisting, and certainly avoid any kind of vibrating handheld tools. Using ice packs or putting heat packs on the epicondylitis can also help. And sometimes an orthosis like a forearm strap or a wrist or an elbow brace can be very helpful in some patients, although it can be difficult to know which patients are going to be most helped. It's one of those situations where you have to try it and see how much benefit they get. Analgesia is obviously indicated. Paracetamol or even a topical non-steroidal can come in useful here. And because the epicondylitis is sufficiently close to the surface that you don't need to be using systemic anti-inflammatories to be getting some benefit. If symptoms persist, though, then obviously go on to an oral anti-inflammatory. If you've got access to rehabilitation and physiotherapy, then that's an excellent way forward. But one of the things to try and not do is to rush quickly into steroid injections. We do not normally now recommend steroid injections routinely because there's very little evidence with epicondylitis that they give anything more than short-term relief, as well as having all the potential risks that go with steroid injections. If you haven't got any response to that patient, or we see them 3 to 6 weeks later after initially seeing them, if they're not getting better, then first of all, consider the diagnosis. Have you actually got the diagnosis right? And if you haven't already referred that patient for a physiotherapist, you should do so. This includes for things like massage and for taping and for ultrasound treatments. It's obviously your call. There are no set guidelines as to when to refer to secondary care. But for me, if I've got a patient who is 4 to 6 months down the line and they are not getting better, then I should be starting to think about whether they should be seeing someone in secondary care. Is the diagnosis correct? And especially if they've got significant pain and functional impairment, we need to get them seen. So I hope that's been helpful. And I think it's also important to say that, fortunately for us in practice, for most cases of tennis elbow, it is a self-limiting condition. It will almost get better by itself, irrespective of what we do. But the average episode can easily take 1 to 2 years to resolve, although the majority do resolve within 1 year. And that applies for both tennis elbow and golfer's elbow. However, up to 10% of people with an epicondylitis don't resolve and do have to go on to secondary care and even for consideration of treatments such as surgery. So I do think that's helpful, and I do hope you found that podcast helpful.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.
We have a great show today, but first, take a second to make sure you've subscribed to our show wherever you're listening to podcasts. It's the best way to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks.
Please take a moment to follow, rate, and review this podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.